Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Congressman Russ Carnahan of Missouri got a coffin on his front lawn. There were bricks through the windows of Democratic congressional offices in Arizona, Kansas, New York, the famous cut gas line, and voicemail death threats. By the end of last week, both Republican and Democratic leaders were condemning violence in politics, but that's what we've got this hour on Point when rage goes over the line. You can join the conversation. What do you make of the bricks and threats of this past week? Are you surprised, given the rhetoric we've heard? And what next? What now? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. The rhetoric has been just as hot as it could be with millions of people listening. Here's Rush Limbaugh about the country on the introduction to his show a week ago today, the day after the passage of the health care reform bill.
And today, as we start the radio program, America is hanging by a thread. So we have to see what we can do with a thread. At the end of the day, our freedom has been assaulted. This is the kind of change that people did not think they were going to get when they voted for Barack Obama. Freedom must win the day.
Rush Limbaugh the morning after, but it was a long ramp-up. Already in January, on Clear Channel's The War Room with Quinn and Rose, here was host Jim Quinn warning of what would happen if Congress moved forward with health care legislation.
I think if they pass this thing, you are going to see insurrection. You're going to see an uprising. People are just not going to take this. I mean, your taxes are going to go through the roof. Yeah. It's going to be a bloodbath when people find out how much this is going to cost. And for the first 4 years, they're not going to get anything.
Insurrection, bloodbath. We're going to hear this hour from all sides, plus get an historian's view of what we're in the middle of right now. Joining me first from Columbia, South Carolina, is Representative James Clyburn, South Carolina Democrat, House Majority Whip. He's spoken out against the threats against lawmakers in the wake of the passage of health care reform legislation. He himself has been a target of some of those threats, including an image of a noose faxed to his office. Representative Clyburn, welcome back to On Point. It's good to have you here.
Well, thank you so much for having me back.
We were fearing that we might see more of this over the weekend and really haven't. Do you think the fever's passed here?
Well, to the extent that we have these folks on the air ginning people up, you'll have this kind of reaction. If they stay off the air or if they have civil discussions, I think you'll have people conducting themselves in a relatively civil manner. I've been through this. I lived during the 60s, was very active when editorial writers would write these very inflammatory editorials, literally inviting vigilante actions against students who were sitting in. I think these guys have really taken a page out of that book, and they're doing it in a world that's totally different from the 60s. Now you've got the Internet. You've got almost instant news flashed around the world, and they can be much more potent with it, and that's what's happening here. And so I think that because so many of them bet the farm that we were not going to pass this health care bill, I think that they were stunned when we did it with such a comfortable margin. But they'll regroup and hopefully get rejected.
Republican leaders have stepped up and said, no, violence isn't the American way. It's not how we debate. It's not how we argue. And I want to ask what you think about that and about accusations that Democrats have made too much of this, House Minority Whip Eric Cantor. But listen with us, if you would, Congressman Clyburn. This is Sarah Palin, former Alaska governor, at a Tea Party rally in Searchlight, Nevada, of course, Harry Reid's hometown. And here she is pushing back against charges that conservative leaders and others were inciting violence with their rhetoric.
Now, when we talk about fighting for our country, let's clear the air right now on what it is that we're talking about. We're not inciting violence. Don't get sucked into the lamestream media's lies about conservative America's standing up for freedom. as inciting violence. Violence isn't the answer. It's a bunch of bunk what the media is trying to feed you. Don't let them divert attention from the debate.
Sarah Palin saying, we are not inciting violence, and don't get distracted by those claims. What do you say, Congressman?
Well, I would say I'll refer former governor to the town hall meeting of Wally Herger, the congressman from California, who in one of his town hall meetings, when a gentleman stood up, I guess I'll call him a gentleman, and said that I'm a proud right-wing terrorist. Wally Herger called him a great American. Now, and God bless him. Now, I would ask her to respond to that. Now, that is the kind of thing that's been happening over and over again. A little bit of it got to the news, not much of it. And I don't know if I've ever seen but one report on that incident that happened during those town hall meetings last fall. That is going to continue to happen when you have Congress people giving aid and comfort. When you've got two people up in the gallery over the House proceedings yelling out, trying to disrupt the gathering, and then 10 or 12 Congress people, Republicans, standing up on the floor of the House of Representatives, cheering them, what do you call that? And I have yet to see anybody denounce it. And, you know, Eric Cantor ought to be ashamed of himself. He has been, well, his religion has been subjected to this sort of thing. And they ought to come out and denounce it and stop talking about it's happening on either side. No Democrat has ever done anything like that. No Democrat has ever disrupted the president's State of the Union address, calling them a lie in the middle of his speech. These are Republicans who are doing this. They are inflaming people. And I think we need to call it what it is.
Senator John McCain, Congressman, said over the weekend, you know, Sarah Palin called in on Twitter. She said, don't retreat, instead reload. All caps, exclamation mark, reload. And, of course, she's put rifle sights over targeted districts of Democratic congressmen that she'd like to see Republicans defeat. Now, John McCain says, you know, that's just regular. He said these are fine. They're used all the time, he said, about these. We talk about battleground states and targeted districts. So maybe this is just this is political language.
Well, it's not political language. I don't know that I've ever heard reload used politically. I'm 69 years old. That's not political language. I've seen stars, check marks on counties, congressional districts, states. I've never seen crosshairs from a rifle on these districts. This is something different. We all know it's something different. We are taking this to another level, and I'm going to tell you, I've seen crazy people do crazy things. And people who are less intelligent, people who may not be in touch with reality, will take this as a call to arms, and somebody is going to get hurt. But they're making a lot of money off of this. Rush Limbaugh with a $100 million contract. And you know, I really pity those people who show up at all these rallies with Sarah Palin, $500,000 contract with Fox, a $1 million book deal. Now, $8 million deal to do a series of reality shows in Alaska. She is going to the bank for those poor people, many of whom cannot pay their insurances, many of whom cannot pay their mortgages, are out here allowing themselves to get ginned up this way. That happened in the South back in the 60s, the 40s and 50s. People with very little power see their power at the end of a gun.
Let's hope it's not there now. House Majority Whip, Democrat James Clyburn, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here's Glenn Beck the day after the health care reform legislation passed the House. Here he is opening his show.
Welcome to the Glenn Beck Program. I know a lot of people in America are probably feeling a little defeated. I mean, if you watch this program, unless you're working in your basement of your mom's house on a blog, you probably feel defeated. But I want you to know, do not feel that way. The battle was lost. The war is not over. The war is just beginning. These are the times that try men's souls.
The battle was lost. The war is not over. Of course, you know, a lot of politicians have used that kind of language. But yet, we've got bricks through windows this time. Joining us right now from Newark, New Jersey, is Eric Bollert. He's a senior fellow and columnist at Media Matters for America. It's a watchdog, media watchdog organization. Works to expose what it calls conservative misinformation in American media. He's been tracking the rhetoric that he says has got us to this point. His latest book is Bloggers on the Bus, How the Internet Changed Politics and the Press. Eric Bollert, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What brought us to this point? It's not only Republicans who have over the years used hot language, but we've got bricks through windows and cut lines and all the rest. What's going on?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Glenn Beck, and you know what Glenn Beck also said on that same day is this is 9/11 all over again. We just don't have the collapsing buildings. He's suggesting, you know, the Obama administration by passing health care had initiated a terrorist attack on defenseless civilians. I mean, this rhetoric is just off the charts. It's been off the charts since Obama was inaugurated. Last January, February, March, a year ago, Glenn Beck was talking about how tyranny was looming in the streets, how we had to save America from certain ruin. President Obama wanted to take away your guns over the summer and this winter. He's talked about progressives and Democrats being a cancer on this country. I mean, the message is undeniable. He's calling out for good people to save this country from ruin at the hands of Democrats. And so who's surprised when people take him up on his warning?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about death threats, smashed windows, violence, and vigilantism after the health care bill. And what is going on here with American politics? We've been talking with Eric Bollert from Media Matters, joining us from Newark, New Jersey. Right now from Washington, David Winston is here, Republican pollster and strategist, president and founder of the Winston Group. He was director of planning for former House Speaker Newt Gingrich and was chief information officer for the Republican National Committee, 89 to 93. David Winston, thanks very much for being here. Welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, but it's not nice to look out and see what's going on when you got bricks through the window. What do you see happening here, David?
Well, I think this is a culmination of actually an extended period of just poor political discourse that began probably, you know, in the early 90s. I think when you think back, hanging Bush in effigy, hanging Sarah Palin in effigy, some of the statements made about Bill Clinton. To give you another example, just that they give sort of a Democratic example, you had Howard Dean at one point saying, Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld don't mind sending people to die. I mean, what we're seeing is this just increased rhetoric that has been occurring in such a way that we now have political discourse that is not discourse, it's just basically contradiction. I mean, it's not people having an argument. It's how can I prove the other person wrong, and nobody's listening to each other, and you result in a situation like this. Now, having said that, I don't think that what we're hearing now is particularly different than some of the things being said about George Bush when he was president, or some of the things that were being said about Bill Clinton when he was president. And I think the overall problem is at some point in time, this country's got to decide that this sort of discourse is not acceptable, and we haven't gotten there yet.
But let me read you a couple of things. You make the equivalency argument, and I don't know. I mean, here's Representative Steve King. This is Republican of Iowa, and this is on Sunday night, kind of shouting out to the last stand of the Tea Partiers there. He said, let's beat the other side to a pulp. Let's chase them down. There is going to be a reckoning. And here's the Tea Party guy, Mike Vanderbug, you know, that got things going. This is his blog urging people to throw bricks through windows of Democratic offices nationwide. And he wrote, break their windows, break them now, break them and run, break them under cover of night, break them with rocks, break them with baseball bats, but break them. Now, I don't recall that kind of language.
Well, no, but if I may, in contrast, somebody hung Sarah Palin in effigy outside their house. I mean, that's pretty grim, too.
This is back in California during the campaign, as I recall. You know?
Yeah. And so what was being said about George Bush in terms of personal attacks on him and some of the the sense of threat there was at an equal level. I guess what I'm saying here, Tom, is this is not one party. This is the way the political discourse has sort of evolved in this country. When you take a look at watching television, there aren't political arguments. It's just contradiction. I mean, you know, when you watch two people get on and sort of, in theory, discuss an issue, they're just trying to just simply contradict the other person. There's no sense of, like, moving an issue forward. And I think part of what we have to do as a country is say that that's the way we want to have political discourse. That's the first part. The other thing, too, is remember, every party has extremists. And the sense of the, and you heard, and I have to say that Congressman Clyburn and I disagree with John Boehner, who's the Republican leader in the House, the moment that happened in the House, came out and condemned it right away. I mean, to some degree, you can't be responsible for every single person in the entire country. I mean, that's just unreasonable. But I think what we're seeing is at some point in time, people have got to decide that this level of discourse is just beyond the pale, and we haven't gotten there. And I would have to say this is on both sides. I mean, Republicans or conservatives have to be better at this, and liberals too. I mean, there has to be some sense of taking responsibility of ratcheting this up under the Bush era.
Eric Bollard, I want to bring you in here. What do you think of the equivalency argument? We heard it last week, and David Winston brings it to us again today. You know, there's just a general degradation of political discourse, and everybody's got some mud under their fingernails.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it because we're in a different media landscape. Rupert Murdoch, Roger Ailes, and Fox News has decided to mainstream and legitimize the most hateful type of political rhetoric we've ever seen in modern day America. I agree under Bill Clinton, people were saying some rotten, awful things about, you know, who killed Vince Foster and Waco and things like that. That was said on the absolute fringes of the media landscape. I would argue the same under Bush. There was no one on MSNBC night after night calling George Bush a cancer on the country and using that kind of violent rhetoric. Were they passionately opposed to the war? Absolutely. What Fox News is doing now, what Rush Limbaugh does now on AM talk radio, we have never seen before in modern America. They are legitimizing this insurrectionist rhetoric, telling people you have got to step forward. And the day is going to come when you're going to have to fight this government on your own, because we're in the land of socialism, and these Democrats are going to ruin America on purpose. Barack Obama ran to become president in order to drive it into the ground. This is new. This is we have never seen anything like this. And for Fox News to do it on television day after day. And we know the cultural role, the pop culture role television plays, that legitimizes all this rancid stuff. This is all brand new. We are in completely different territory.
Eric Bollard, David Winston, please stand by. I want to bring our listeners in. Tim in West Newbury, Massachusetts. Tim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I think, you know, the whole Barack Obama getting elected just kind of brought out, you know, I think the elephant in the room is racism. And I think the Republican Party is using the most racist and, I'll say for a politer word than ignorant, but misinformed segment of the population to do their bidding. I think they bid off more than they can chew, and I think these people are all too willing to swallow the lies and rhetoric that he's a communist, that he's a socialist, and you can present them with facts, but it's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. I mean, you can't argue facts with these people because they're all too willing to drink the lies to validate their own hate, and that's what we're dealing with. And I agree that there is a little bit on both sides, but I don't think we're comparing apples to apples whatsoever as to the rhetoric from the left versus the over-the-top rhetoric from the right. And furthermore, we know we don't have a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week slime machine putting out this stuff. So, you know, thank God for, you know, public radio where we can actually get civil talk on these issues.
Well, we try, but we'll see. Tim, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Let's get one from Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
First off, I'd like to ask the gentleman from Media Matters, when he talks about the rhetoric that's on Fox. Now, I watch Fox once in a great while. I don't watch it that often. But I know Keith Olbermann called George Bush a fascist, a Nazi, so that him, Cheney, and Rumsfeld should be tried for war criminals and published accordingly. Ed Schultz said that they ought to pull the heart out of Cheney. It's a political football and kick it around and call them all kinds of names. And I'm sure Media Matters reports that. But as far as the other rhetoric goes, remember Nancy Pelosi, when she said that, that President Bush was mentally challenged.
Our list is growing. Let Eric come to it while we can remember it. Eric, what do you say to Jerry's observations?
Well, I think there's a difference between debating the war issue, and people were passionate, and Keith Olbermann did famously, I think, use the term fascist once in a special comment about George Bush and the war. I'm not sure he might have walked that back later. I'm not sure. We're talking about 8 years in office, and we can find a handful of incidents. You turn on Fox News in the next 30 or 40 minutes, you're going to find maybe not the word fascist, but in a 24-hour cycle. I mean, Glenn Beck has constantly referred to the Obama administration as a Nazi-like organization, as a fascist organization. Rush Limbaugh's name has done the same thing. Barack Obama is a racist, a fascist, a communist, and a socialist. You cannot find during the anti-war years that kind of rhetoric from MSNBC or any of the other sites. And that's why after the 2002 vote to authorize war, we didn't see bricks being thrown through windows. We didn't see gas lines being cut. We didn't see, these death threats being left on voicemails. That kind of insurrectionist rhetoric is not part of the liberal dialogue.
David, the outcomes do look different, at least in the past week. I mean, brick through window, that's not something we've seen for a long, long time, maybe since the Vietnam War, and nobody's ever seen that as sort of the American way. Nobody wants it. Republicans have condemned it as over the line. I mean, we've got different outcomes here. What do you attribute that to, David?
Well, Tom, I guess a lot of things here in terms of, well, first off, you know, I mean, the fact is MSNBC, or Dennis Radigan on MSNBC referred to Tea Partiers as racist and Nazis and using the same level of rhetoric, and I know because I was actually on that particular show when he did that.
But is the volume really the same? I mean,
bear with me on this.
Okay.
And I mean, maybe at this point, it may be slightly different than other points, mainly because you've got an aggrieved group. If you go back to the folks who were opposed to what was going on in Iraq, my sense is the volume was there in terms of their response. And I have to say, because it was Iraq, it's okay, but because it's healthcare, it's not. I think is not a good point to argue from. I mean, I think the fact is that either the rhetoric is there or it's not, and I believe it is in both cases, and it's incorrect in both cases. If I may, I want to go back to the first caller, because I have to say I sort of personally take offense, and I think this is an example of, in fact, the problem. I mean, there's a person who's basically said all Republicans are racist.
No, I didn't hear that.
The motivation was racist based.
Yeah, but not all Republicans are throwing bricks through windows. Not all Republicans are drawing nooses and faxing them to congressmen.
And Tom, maybe I'm incorrect on this, and I'd be happy to go back and like listen to it. But just the illusion of that, it's again, that's the level of our political discourse. We throw a name out first. And then we go to some other part of the debate. I mean, that's the problem with this discourse at this point. At some point in time, we've got to stop impugning the motivations of each other. We may disagree, but what we're doing right now is we're stepping forward and impugning the motivations of each other, and that is fundamentally destructive to this society. And it's coming from both sides. And to
but when people
one
are...
side is doing better than the other, one side is not doing this and the other side is, I just believe is incorrect.
But when people are I mean, we have congressmen saying they've been, called like the most volatile racial slur. Now, when that happens, you're not impugning someone when you look at motives.
And no one is saying that is correct, but you've also had situations on the Republican side where some things have happened, not perhaps in terms of the same level, but again, you go back to the Bush era. I mean, Bush was consistently vilified by MSNBC, CNN, a lot of folks. I mean, I don't want to just pick.
Why didn't we have bricks through windows then? And we really didn't. I mean, I remember rallies that were people standing in the rain at corners quietly with a sign. Now we've got signs. You know, if Brown won't stop it, a Browning will. This is right outside the Capitol building with a big drawing of a pistol, of a Browning, automatic, semi-automatic pistol. But Congressman saying kind of you go.
What was being used instead back then was just name calling. For example, I mean, Nancy Pelosi said Bush is an incompetent leader. He's a person who has no judgment, no experience, no knowledge.
Okay, but isn't that the difference right there? A pistol, a big pistol, right outside the Capitol while a vote's going on versus an incompetent leader? Isn't there a difference of qualitative difference there?
Well, okay, then you got a pistol outside and you got hanging him Bush in effigy. You're going to tell me one is better than the other?
Eric, what do you say?
Well, the difference is the media landscape. I mean, you have protesters saying and doing one thing, and we have politicians calling Bush names. The difference is the backdrop. The difference is this noise machine, which is spreading this message of hate. And what we haven't talked about has been the right-wing media's response last week. What was the response? A, denial. Rush Limbaugh said 95% of this stuff is trumped up. Apparently, the BRICS were trumped up. The death threats were trumped up.
They weren't.
Mm-hmm. They were just a diversion. That was his claim. And B, and this was almost as frightening, and we saw this on Fox. We saw this everywhere. Democrats had it coming. They pushed people too far. They shouldn't have been surprised. We all knew this violence was bubbling up. And by passing a law these people didn't like, Democrats therefore became a target. There was an absolute rationalization within the right-wing media all last week. Democrats should have seen this coming. We told them we didn't like this bill. We told them we were angry.
But Republican leaders were condemning the violence.
So if BRICS started flying, who was surprised? Who would be surprised? That is an amazing rationalization to put out on the conservative mainstream media.
Tom, if I may, two
please.
Points. One, if you remember MoveOn.org when they did the movie about Jup and morphing Bush into Hitler, right?
Was
that acceptable discourse?
You're getting the facts wrong. That was a contest they had in 1,500
and
entries.
They put it
and
online.
Three
sorry,
people.
But,
yeah, exactly. That was not okay. MoveOn.
Yeah, but
also,
still, I mean.
But Tom, if I may, there's one other point. This is what happens also, I would suggest, and this is part of the governance dynamic, is when you don't build a large consensus for a huge policy, to some degree, the dynamic you have here is you allow the public to be remarkably split, and in this particular situation, when you're dealing with a subject that is so close to everybody, right, emotions are going to run high, and that's why building a consensus is even that much more important.
But now, don't we get really down to it here, David? Because it was part of the Republican strategy; it wasn't secret to just oppose this thing, which they did. How do you build a consensus when there's a one party is really invested in rock solid opposition and, bring it down?
Okay, well, Tom, this is where you and I are likely to disagree on this point. Okay, not a surprise here, but to some degree, that's because Republicans felt they hadn't been involved effectively in terms of being asked to help shape this bill.
But
they
we all saw last summer in Max Baucus's committee.
Look at
the committee meetings. They went on and on and on. No, the Republicans are right there.
Written. Having worked on the Hill, I mean, the bill is written in people sitting down and working through it at a leadership level, and the leadership on the Democratic side was not engaging the leadership on the Republican side.
Max Baucus and the rest of his committee, it's not nobody's.
When I'm talking about Reid and Pelosi in this particular case, and again, having worked on the Hill, having been Newt's director of planning, I know how the bills are put together. And with something at that scale, that's where it happens. And the Republican leadership was just not invited into those particular rooms.
Eric?
Well, again, I think you have it right, Tom. I mean, the strategy, Mitch McConnell was quite plain about this. We're going to and so was Boehner in the House. We're going to oppose everything. That is our strategy. We're the party of no. And so to then to take from that the fact that they didn't get any Republican votes and therefore – it wasn't the problem is the rationalization, because if you're saying it wasn't popular, therefore you're giving people the green light to be angry, to throw bricks, to hurl insults at politicians. That's a very dangerous game. And also this idea that the president should basically rule by Gallup. You know, we're only going to pass legislation that has 70% approval rating. That has never been the premise we've ever used, and I don't think we should start.
Eric Bollert, stand by. David Winston, historian Julian Zelizer joins us when we return. Here's former Republican congressman from Iowa, Jim Leach, saying we have to think of ourselves as what kind of people are we when these things happen. He said, I think there's something that's been let loose in American politics that has to be thought about. We're doing that right here, listeners. What do you think? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're We're talking this hour about death threats, smashed windows, violence, and vigilantism after the health care bill and what's going on here. David Winston is with us, Republican pollster and strategist, joining us from Washington. From Newark, New Jersey, Eric Bollard is with us from Media Matters. We'll hear in just a moment from historian Julian Zelizer. Here's a little bit of an online video remix making the rounds of the Yes We Can Obama campaign stuff put together with John Boehner's fiery House speech with the Hell No before the passage of health care reform.
Yes, we can to opportunity and prosperity.
Hell no, you can't!
Yes, we can to opportunity and prosperity.
No, you can't!
Yes, we can in this nation.
No, you can't!
Yes, we can repair this world.
Yeah, just enough of that little Will I Am with John Boehner thrown in. Here are threatening messages left on the machine of Congressman Bark Stupak.
Congressman Stupak, you are one big piece of human. And think about this. There are millions of people across the country who wish you ill.
Nice. And here's another.
Congressman Stupak, you baby killing you turncoat son piece. I hope you bleed out your got cancer and die.
And crash comes the brick through the window. Joining us right now from Princeton, New Jersey, is historian Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at the university. His latest book is Arsenal of Democracy. Julian Zelizer, thanks for being with us. Do you see something new going on here, sir?
Yeah, I think there's two elements that are new. The first, as has been said, is that these voices now have outlets in the mainstream media and through the internet. They can reach a much larger audience than they could, say, in 1963, when in Texas people were holding up wanted for treason signs to welcome President Kennedy to the city. And the second is there are connections between the mainstream leaders of the Republican Party and some of these elements. Palin is one that causes concern. And that's the question. How tied are they and how willing are they to take a stand against these groups? The answer to everything we've seen recently is easy. It's not to say it's existed in the past or it's not to say both sides do it. It's to say it's wrong and it has to stop.
What's the connection between Palin and these groups, as you put it? We better be very explicit there. She said, you know, this is not about violence. She said just over the weekend campaigning and earlier with John McCain.
I think former Governor Palin could choose other words than the one she chose with her Facebook page. She could use other symbols than the rifle to target, quote unquote, the states that need to be focused on. And then there's people like Dick Armey who have, you know, been a connection between the Tea Party movement and the Republican leadership. And again, all the Tea Party movement is not this, and that's important to state. Mm-hmm. There are people who have legitimate arguments and concerns about government, but there are certain elements that we have seen that are veering toward violence and threats, and that's what we're really talking about.
Let's get a call here from Nashville, Tennessee, and Sam. Sam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm trying to address a different part of this that I don't think anybody has really put in perspective as of yet, and yet since you have a historian on,
okay.
I think it's an interesting time to do that. And one is, we have always had these kind of uprisings and strange and almost violent political discourse. Anytime there's been a difficult movement in history that's going to change the course of American history, things like the during the Civil War, slavery, there were riots, there was a tremendous amount of opposition in the Congress and every two abolishing slavery.
But the Civil War, Sam. I mean, that, you know, should we have to live in a way and have a discourse where we have to compare it to the Civil War? It almost tore the country to pieces.
I think you have to look at that all of those, even and during the '60s, during the Civil Rights Movement, there were a tremendous amount of people who were anti-civil rights, and a lot of these people were people that were led to believe that things were different than they were by powerful political interests, by powerful financial interests, the same in this, by people with vested interests who spoke to people who really did not have a solid opinion, but their opinion was formed by the opinions of others.
Let's take it to our historian. We've got it, Sam. Julian Zelizer, you cite the magnification through the media we have today as a difference. But is there more than that or not? Is this, in some sense, the American way just magnified by cable TV and the punditocracy?
Well, look, I do think we've had this kind of rhetoric. I mean, the rhetoric surrounding the Civil Rights Bill of 1964, the rhetoric and the outright violence and murder that we saw was pretty horrendous. And there have been moments when we deal with big issues and these kind of elements creep into our political system. So I do think there is this issue of magnification. Notably, the Republicans worked hard to separate themselves from these groups, especially after Barry Goldwater lost in the 1964 election because they realized the cost of being tied. So that's
extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice, Barry Goldwater's.
And many Republicans concluded that it actually could be a vice. And so they understood they had to appeal to moderate voters. But it's true that we always have extremist elements in our political system.
But yes, but do you feel like we're in new terrain when you put the media mouthpiece together with that history? I mean, that could add up to the same old, or it could add up to something quite different.
It's too easy to go national. I think there was a value to keeping voices like this on the fringes. They are not on the fringes right now, and you're right, that is a danger. There's also a disconnect between the bill they're talking about and the rhetoric we're getting. This health care bill is far from socialized medicine. I mean, President Obama settled for something more moderate than President Clinton pushed for, yet you would never guess that from the kind of anger that's emerging, and that suggests that the anger might be about something else.
David, what about that? I mean, here I've got a web comment from Larry who says, when the government no longer serves the people, we have the right to abolish it. And he's saying this essentially in response to the health care reform bill. Do you see,
a couple of things. One, I want to make a distinction between this and the civil rights movement. Remember, when the civil rights bill passed, it was overwhelmingly bipartisan. I mean, 80% of Republicans voted, like 2/3 of Democrats voted for it. I mean, it was overwhelmingly bipartisan. The situation here is you have a bill where you've got one party very much opposed to it. You've got independents basically somewhat opposed to it, and Democrats very much for it. And so what you have is you have a policy direction that is not consensus. And as a result of that, you've created a situation where there's a lot of angst and a lot of concern about the bill. And again, going back to the interpretation of the bill, that's his interpretation. There are other people who have other interpretations. I'm not going to suggest which one's right or wrong. But the fact is, we didn't get to a point to do a huge policy shift where there was consensus or general agreement in terms of the country. And as a result of this, we're having extraordinarily significant difficulties.
Two things there. I mean, but there's still that the issue sitting out there that it was part of a Republican strategy to turn this into an Obama Waterloo.
One statement. That was one statement from one senator. Look, I mean, I work with. There was an attempt here in terms of trying to figure out what could we work together. Where could there be agreement? Where were there going to be disagreements? But ultimately what happened when those meetings occurred, and again, I know this is something that people are uncomfortable with in the sense they want to believe it, but the fact is Republicans did not have the chance in those meetings, in the critical meetings, to be able to interject with their ideas into the process in a way that would matter.
Our historian Julian Zelizer says this is compromised legislation. I mean, and it is, of course, there's no public option in here. Comes from private companies.
My respect to him, but historians also have interpretations. And I would suggest that's his interpretation, and he may have facts that he's basing that on. I would obviously disagree with that. But I think in this particular case, the overall dynamic is there wasn't an effective consensus built, and as a result, it's really negatively impacting the country, and at this point, sort of pulling it apart.
Julian, it's the Democrats' fault.
No, and I want to just add something on civil rights. The tension was regional. It's true that the Republicans came through in the end, but the tension was with Southern Democrats who opposed and filibustered that bill, and there was deep animosity about that legislation. So the idea there was this huge consensus that made it somehow different is not true. Many Southern Democrats went Republican after that. And second, again, conservatism has been an integral part of our politics since the 70s. But there's no need for conservatism to embrace not polarized rhetoric. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about people threatening violence. And in the context of an African-American president, we have to understand that those words, that rhetoric means something very different than it might in a different political situation. Mm-hmm. So we're just talking about that removing the party from these parts of the Tea Party movement.
Let's go to our listeners, Burlington, Connecticut. Art, you're on the air, Art.
Tom.
Oh, hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And all your discussions. It's just that the evil in this these attacks, attacks on congressional people, anybody that attacks left or right. This is the kind of thing that reminds me of Kristallnacht in Germany in the mid-30s. Adolf Hitler and the Nazis did this. They broke the windows of the Jewish business people, Jewish residences. They didn't like their positions. They didn't like those people. This is America. I didn't vote for Mr. Obama, but he is my president today. And I do honestly believe that's the way most Americans feel. I'm a middle of the roader.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like that, but that's the way I am. It just upsets me that we get these attacks. I'm afraid that it's incumbent on our congressional people to let this be known that they respect the other opinion. When they attack the other side, I don't appreciate that either, whether it's on the left or the right. They are the congressional people. This is America.
Not bricks through window country. We like to think anyway. Art, I appreciate your call. Eric Bollert, I mean, there's all kinds of background here, but once the brick goes through the window, and not just one, but right across the country, and you heard the language there from Mike Vanderbilt calling for this, break them with rocks, break them with slingshots, baseball bats. Our caller Art, his mind goes back to the 1930s. We don't want to go there, but genie gets out of the bottle, you don't know where it's going to go, Eric.
Yeah, and a year ago, almost when the first Tea Party protests started, those Nazi, those swastika posters were there from day one. Day one.
But that was an accusation against the president.
Right, that's right. But that sort of ugly specter has been hanging over this since day one. Nazi, fascism, socialism. But the caller also talked about how Republicans have to denounce this. Here's the equation. Fox News is the opposition party today. Fox News runs the conservative movement in America.
So you say
it basically runs the Republican Party. Leaders cannot run out and denounce this when Glenn Beck is the author of it. They're in a very tricky spot. When they last year, when a couple people sort of stepped forward and criticized Rush Limbaugh for some of the angry, hateful things. Within 24 hours, those Republicans were on his show begging for forgiveness.
Yeah, David, they are
at the mercy of the Republican noise machine at this point. They built it, and now they don't know what to do with it.
David Winston, how about that? Is it hard for wiser, cooler heads to step forward if you've got pundits who are kind of into the fury?
Well, Tom, I mean, I'm no surprise I'm going to disagree here with that point. I mean, Fox does not run the Republican Party. I mean, you've got leadership, and you've heard that leadership come out very clearly in terms of saying how horrible this stuff is. And I want to go back and emphasize just so what is going on, any act of violence is absolutely unacceptable, okay? And I think you hear that from Boehner. You hear that from McConnell. So the idea somehow that the Republican leaders are sort of letting this slip by is fundamentally incorrect. Also, Fox is not driving the Republican Party. It is just simply a news network.
Come on.
No.
That is
a manifestation to sort of give Fox more credit than it does. I'm sorry, but it is not Fox who decides what the Republican policy is in terms of approaching health care and a variety of different issues. Now, having said that, I mean, are they trying to influence their viewership? Clearly they are. I mean, there's no question of that. But
what do you think of Sarah Palin saying reload, all caps, exclamation mark, reload? Is that...
Well, I mean, so, what about Howard Dean saying that Bush was willing to, doesn't mind sending people to die? I mean, look, you've got people on both sides who make statements that are certainly incendiary at certain levels, right? And so my broader point here is the fact that it is the nature of the overall political discourse that has gotten here, and as a country we have to do something about it because it is leading to situations that doesn't let us effectively discuss issues. Instead, we're just name-calling each other.
Yeah. Rita, in Middletown, Connecticut. Rita, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to give a perspective from my my children. Last night at dinner, my husband and I were sitting with our two 16-year-old boys and their friend, and the one thing that they came up with was what happened to United States of America, what happened to United. We have five, maybe six different political parties going on. Even the Republicans are splitting into sub-parties. There's no United any longer, and I think that we have to get back to that.
Reed, I'm glad you raised that. Who wouldn't have sympathy for young Americans looking at this and thinking, holy smokes, is this my country? Julian Zelizer, give us some perspective here. What, historically, when we get in, you know, tough spot, what's the way out of this?
You know, sometimes there's a leader, a president who's able to transcend not the divisions, but this kind of rhetoric. Even Ronald Reagan was very cognizant of the fact that Barry Goldwater scared a lot of Americans, and he scared a lot of Americans away from conservatism, not toward it. And Reagan worked very hard to find positive issues that conservatives could talk about, whether anti-communism or supply-side economics. And I think within Republican circles, that was quite important. It's also generational. You know, we do hope that the same young people she's talking about, that they come into the political system with a different kind of discourse than we're seeing today.
Eric Bowler, do you think we've seen the worst of it, sort of peered into the edge of broken windows and pulling back now or not?
No, absolutely not. I mean, we've seen acts of vigilante political violence for the last year. We saw someone fly a plane into an IRS building. We saw someone travel from California so they could open fire on the Pentagon. Both of these people had written extensively about their anti-government feelings. This is going to continue, and it's going to get worse if the rhetoric doesn't change.
Well, let's hope that it doesn't do either, but we are very alert to all the possibilities today and grateful to each of you for being with us. Eric Bowlert with Media Matters joining us from Newark, author of Bloggers on the Bus. Eric, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
David Winston, Republican pollster and strategist, president of the Winston Group, joining us today from Washington. David, it's always great to have you. Thank you very much for your perspective today.
Thanks, Tom.
And Julian Zelizer, author of Arsenal of Democracy, professor of history at Princeton University. Thank you very much, Julian Zelizer.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. Be safe. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.